Greetings, everybody. This is the Morning Lineup podcast for Friday, December 15th. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, and the winter meetings are in the rear view, and yet there's still a ton of hot stove action in the future. There's still a lot of work to be done. I'm bringing my friend and colleague Allison Footer to talk about that. Foot, how are you?
I'm great, Castro. How are you? Busy week, kind of. Busy week of waiting for something to happen, which often is, it seems like that takes longer than when things actually start moving.
Exactly. It's the anticipation and the running around the hotel, chasing down stuff that doesn't come to fruition totally. But I think there's a lot of irons in the fire, so to speak. There's obviously a lot of huge trade discussion going on across the major league landscape, and we'll get into some of that. But yeah, you look at some of the big names still on the board from a free agent perspective. Obviously, JD Martinez and Eric Hosmer are the top position players. We've seen hardly any position player movement outside of catchers here in this offseason market so far. So that's been interesting. And on the pitching side, a slew of relief deals in recent days, and yet Wade Davis, by most accounts, the best reliever available, he's still available. So some uncertainty as to where he might be headed. And then in the starting pitching market, really Bupkis happening at the top end with Yu Darvish, Jake Arrieta, and Alex Cobb. It seems like teams are more focused on potential trade market there. You look at a name like Chris Archer or Garrett Cole, these impact controllable starters. So, I mean, it's rare. We're right here smack dab in the middle of December, and it's rare to have this much discussion taking place still at this point.
Yeah, and I think any major league player will tell you that if they don't have a team by January 1st, they start getting a little antsy. It gets a little worrisome. You know, even guys like that you just mentioned, like the top free agents, they still would like a resolution. And it just seemed like what we saw was a lot of relievers who are good, you know, definitely good, but signing really big contracts. I mean, you know, the Astros signed Joe Smith to a 2-year deal worth $15 million. And he's a late inning guy, but not necessarily like a closer. And is that just where this is going? I know that part of it is just because like a lot of these guys are Scott Boras clients, and he likes to take his time, and he's a little bit more deliberate than just making sure everybody's got a home by the end of the winter meetings. Of course, we know that the winter meetings are just it's symbolic. I mean, they like to do business, and there's a lot of groundwork that's laid. You don't have to get something done. There's no deadline. This thing can go on. But I don't know. I mean, does the fact that all like relievers signed lucrative contracts, I mean, is that going to affect any other areas, do you think?
It could. Certainly, the price has gone up. The price of doing business in the relief market has gone up in recent years. You started to see that with the Andrew Miller contract a few years ago, where, you know, that was a guy with no real closing experience. But obviously, you know, a true asset in the setup role. And he got, you know, 4 years at $9 million a year. And now, you know, $9 million was kind of the going rate for a lot of these guys. Brian Shaw, Miller's former teammate in Cleveland, got 3 years at $9 million a year. So, that's escalated. And then teams have gotten more content to wait things out, I think, in other areas. And the price of power maybe is, and we say this knowing that Giancarlo Stanton makes a major amount of money, and the Yankees were willing to take that on, but most of that on. But yeah, the price of power has been deflated a little bit. So we'll see how that affects JD Martinez. But yeah, it's just a lot of patience taking place. And yeah, you know, the Boras thing, I spoke with someone from the Boras Corp, during the winter meetings this week, and he said, look, we're not slow playing the market. We are, I mean, they are the market, really. they control the top end of the market. I think they're as eager as anybody to get some stuff done, but I think there's patience, on the part of the clubs to get the right deal, to get the right value. Let's talk about the Red Sox here, Foot, because to me, they're maybe the most fascinating team right now, just because for a couple of reasons. One, Dave Dombrowski's kind of put it all out there. Like, we're not worried about the luxury tax threshold. We're going to improve this ball club. They need power. They need production. They need a bat in the middle of that lineup. There's different ways they can go about it, but you know they're going to make some kind of impact move sometime in the next several weeks, if not the next several days. And, you know, the other facet of it, of course, is what the Yankees did with Giancarlo Stanton. That compels action out of the Red Sox all the more. But Dave Dombrowski is usually known for the quick strike. You know, he seizes what he wants. He goes out and gets it. But this, whether it be the market conditions or maybe he's just taking a more patient approach, whatever the situation, hasn't happened just yet for the Red Sox. But you know, what do you think would be the right tack for this club moving forward? Is it JD Martinez? Is it Eric Hosmer? Is it someone else in the trade market or the free agent market? What are your expectations here?
Honestly, I felt like JD Martinez was a perfect fit for them from the start. And I think that I still feel that way. I'm not sure that anybody anticipated that this would still be the case where those two guys were still out there at this point. Like you said, we're talking about Boris clients. I don't care what they say about, oh, we're not the reason why things are moving so slowly. You know, they are. But yeah, I mean, the Red Sox absolutely have to do something. And they, like you said, they're not a team that has to stand pat for any kind of financial reasons. They're not a team that should stand pat. They certainly, you know, it's just a bitter end to the season in 2017. And they're going to have to answer the Yankees Stanton thing. So I don't know. I feel like JD Martinez would be more of an impact player than Eric Hosmer, even though I think Eric Hosmer is a fantastic player, but I see JD Martinez being a better fit, and I feel like that's going to get done. And they're just kind of, I don't know if it's, you know, okay, you make your move. All right, we'll make our move. And, you know, I don't know how these negotiations work. And the thing that Dave Dombrowski is really good at is saying a lot, being very forthcoming and really not telling you a whole lot about what's actually going on, which is what a general manager should be doing, by the way. But I don't know. What do you think? My prediction is JD Martinez.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. I think there's maybe an avenue. People were throwing out their winter meetings that the Red Sox should get JD Martinez and Eric Hosmer. And that's much easier said than done when you start to factor in the luxury tax implications and sometimes paying, you know, 50 cents on the dollar, depending on where you're at the penalty cycle, but an extra 50 cents on the dollar, I should say. I could see an avenue where they get JD and basically, he's your DH, unless they do trade Jackie Bradley Jr., which, you know, Dave's been pretty clear. He's not intent on doing that, but obviously things can change. You know, make Martinez your DH, and you might have an avenue at Carlos Santana, you know, at first base. That would be a lesser a deal than the Eric Hosmer deal. So that's all possible, but all we can do right now is speculate because we're playing the waiting game with the Red Sox. Here's what Dave Dombrowski himself had to say about where the Red Sox are at right now.
I figured where we were that probably, that's why when everybody kept saying you're going to the winter meetings and a bunch of things that happened, I think I said to a couple people, well, there's a long time after the winter meetings before the season begins, and I just know where we are and what some of the things we're talking about would probably take a while. You got a lot of information, you do what you need to do, we had a lot of conversations, it was busy, but you continue to move forward from here, and again, and not a very surprising for me where we are at this time.
So that's the latest on the Red Sox, and let's go elsewhere in the AL East because Manny Machado is the big name right now. Everybody's talking about Manny Machado and whether he'll be traded. This conversation has escalated quickly. I think Giancarlo Stanton going to the Yankees has had a little something to do with that. You know, the Orioles are saying they could trade Machado and still potentially contend in 2018, especially if they get some major league pitching back. I'm not so sure about that, but, you know, stranger things have happened, but a lot of strange conversations taking place out there. We've heard in recent days from Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic that the White Sox have been one of the more aggressive suitors of Machado, which, you know, makes no sense from a, timetable standpoint, you know, where the White Sox are at in the competitive timetable. But, you know, there's been talk of them acquiring Machado and then flipping him or maybe just taking advantage of having him in-house and maybe selling him on the idea of staying on the South Side. But what do you think of that, Foot? What do you think of this, you know, this White Sox-Machado possibility?
Well, I thought it was ridiculous when I first heard about it because, like you said, it makes absolutely no sense. The White Sox have a plan. They put it together. They have done a very good job of acquiring the talent that they need to be good later, not so much in the immediate future, and Machado being a year away from free agency and going to have a very expensive price tag attached to him a year from now. So none of that made any sense. And then I thought, not just me, obviously everybody was thinking, well, they can flip him. And who could they flip him to? Okay, they could flip him to the Yankees. And so that would be, to me, that would be gigantic egg on the faces of the Orioles, because no matter how you could justify it, try to explain this thing away, and put a middleman in the middle, it still would, Orioles fans would still be looking at this as the Orioles giving Manny Machado to a division rival, not being the Yankees. So, you know, it seems a little bit weird to me, but I thought, well, that absolutely could happen. And then I was actually reading your article on Sports on Earth and really explaining why that probably can't happen because of the Yankees needing to, you know, stay under the luxury tax threshold and really being pretty determined to do that, pretty steadfastly committed to that. So maybe it wouldn't happen, and maybe it would happen sometime next trade deadline. But, you know, at the same time, you know, if the White Sox are looking to make moves and be more aggressive, you know, do you need to necessarily wait until the trade deadline? Why can't you get something done in the offseason before? But you know, this was all my thing all day until I read your logic, which obviously makes sense, that maybe they can't really take on Manny Machado. So now I have to rethink that. But I mean, there's something to these rumors, right? I mean, I can't imagine there's nothing to the White Sox being interested in Machado if it wasn't actually happening. I mean, there's a lot that you have to wait through this time of year in terms of what's true and what's not and what's exaggerated and what's just stuff that teams and agents are putting out there to sort of get the conversation going. But it seems, I don't know, it seems a little far-fetched, the entire thing. I'm not really sure what to make of it, just like everything else that's gone on this offseason.
It's convoluted, maybe even needlessly convoluted. You know, the thought of flipping him for better prospects is a gamble, obviously. I don't know how much better those prospects would be, 10% better, 5% better. I have no idea what the percentage would be. But yeah, it seems awfully complex. I don't know. The Yankees thing that you're alluding to with the luxury taxes, I mean, the bottom line is Machado is arbitration eligible for the final time. He's projected to make somewhere in the neighborhood of $17 million in 2018. So for the Yankees to stay under 197, which has been their intent all along, even after the Giancarlo Stanton trade, you know, that's going to eat up a significant amount of whatever wiggle room they have left. And it will leave them pretty short when it comes to adding on pitching. And you know, every team wants to you know, leave itself some cushion there for midseason if there's acquisitions to be made at the trade deadline. So it's complicated on a lot of fronts. If I'm Dan Duquette of the Orioles and I do trade Manny Machado to the White Sox, maybe you can have some kind of return policy like on your receipt, you know, when you're doing your holiday shopping, because some kind of stipulation on there that you're not allowed to trade him to the New York Yankees or to the Boston Red Sox or anybody else. So that's in the AL East. So, A lot of big conversations happen there in Baltimore. It'd be fascinating to see where this leads. Another team I'm fascinated by is the Minnesota Twins. Now, Foot, you were talking about the, you know, escalation of relief contracts earlier. The Twins got, I guess, in terms of this market, maybe a relative bargain on Fernando Rodney. Had 39 saves for the D-backs last year, a high ERA, or on the higher side to go with that. But they get him on 1 year, $4.5 million deal with incentives that could push it to $6 million. I think this accentuates that the Twins are serious about building on the momentum from that wild card pursuit, that wild card bid in 2017. But still more to be done there. Still need an impact starter, and they are in on Yu Darvish. Thad Levine, their GM, of course, has a history with Darvish from their days in Texas. So that'd be really, you'd have to think a lot differently about this Twins team if they were to reel in, you know, one of the bigger fish in the starting pool.
Yeah, and you can't really figure out any reason why they shouldn't be active. Then they should be looking into the free agent market. I don't think that they're really in a position where they should be like trading a lot of their younger talent to get somebody. I would not want them to do that. You know, and I said last year, I mean, I really commend those guys for how far they went, for the fact that they got one of those one of the two wild cards that they were in that game. Because I was watching Bartolo Colon throughout the season, and I said, this is why the Twins aren't quite there yet, because they need a Bartolo Colon to be in their rotation to get them through a season. And that usually means that they're not strong enough, there's not enough depth, that they really don't have a full, you know, 7 months in them to be able to really make a run. I mean, the Rodney deal is fine. You know, I get a little skeptical when you have like an older guy like that. Like you said, his ERA was, 4.23. It was okay. I mean, he had a lot of saves. That's fine. But what he is a guy that has closing experience, and that's something that the Twins don't have a lot of. The fact that he has 300 career saves of 15 seasons, that to me, you know, those, those kinds of stats, while impressive when you're looking back at somebody's career, they don't do a lot for me when you're looking toward what he could be doing in the following season, because he's an older pitcher and you just wonder, like, you know, when is this going to run out? But hopefully for the Twins' sake, because I just really like what they've done with their organization. I like, I just really like that organization, and I, you know, you root for the underdog, and so I hope that it does work out for them. And I think that'd be awesome to get a guy like Darvish. You know, there's a lot of talk about that he was tipping his pitches in the World Series. The Astros definitely were onto him in some capacity. I mean, we were laughing, Castro, when Carlos Correa, like, just flat out said after game six, like, I don't know, if you told me we were going to try to win a World Series with you, Darvish, on the mound facing him, I'd take that bet. And they certainly sounded like they had a little bit of an edge that we couldn't figure out why they felt that way. And it, so, you know, maybe he has to work on something there and figure something out where he's not giving himself away, but let's not take away the fact that he's still one of the premier pitchers in baseball and still somebody that any team, you know, that could be a deciding, that could be a difference maker. And I think when it comes to the Twins, that is exactly the kind of guy that they should be getting now, you know, financially. I mean, that's going to be big for them to take on a salary like that. But I love the fact that they're in on that. I love the fact that the Twins are relevant. I think it's great for baseball. It's a, you know, the Twins have a great history, and you know, Jack Morris going to the Hall of Fame, wouldn't that be fun if they got a little bit further than they did last year?
That would be fun. Yeah, the tipping pitches thing, I'm not sure exactly what to make of it. We actually had one of our researchers, Andrew Simon, take a look at the video, and he basically said, you know, he just missed his spots a lot with the slider, and he got two swings and misses with the slider in the World Series, so that might have been a bigger issue. But yeah, if the Astros keyed in on something, more power to him. I don't know why that would be revealed after the fact. I think you'd want to capitalize on it further going down the road, but you know, we mentioned the Twins trying to maintain their momentum. The Cardinals are trying to gather some momentum after 2 years of not reaching October, and they've had a pretty interesting week. But obviously, the Marcelo Ozuna trade is the big deal there. That trade did become official on Thursday. First of all, let's hear from the Marlins perspective. Let's hear what Michael Hill had to say about it.
We're extremely excited about acquiring all four pieces and the deal, but in Alcantara, we feel like this is a frontline major league starter, a fastball in the mid to upper 90s, power slider, changeup in place, a talent that we're very excited to put into the organization. And Magnaris Sierra, we love the tool package that he brings. A speed element that we introduce into our lineup on both sides of the ball, offensively, defensively, an above average defensive player, above average arm, above average speed tool, top of the lineup type of bat that we felt was nice to mix in when we think about, you know, spacious Marlins Park and his ability to cover ground and control, you know, the running game with his arm strength.
So yeah, we'll get in the Cardinals in just a second, Foot, but I do want to clue in on the Marlins for 1 second here. Two-thirds of their outfield are gone. We know the other third. It's Christian Yelich. We know he probably has the most trade value in terms of prospect acquisition of any of those guys, because Stanton, of course, had the gargantuan contract that was such a factor in that deal, and Ozuna, you know, 2 years of control versus Yelich, 4 years of control and younger player and all that stuff. So Christian Yelich, to me, if you're going to go this far down the road, keep going. I know you could maintain. They're basically where they want to be now, payroll-wise, for 2018 for the most part. So they don't have to keep shedding salaries. But, you know, you really want to remake this franchise. I don't see a real competitive window within the Christian Yelich window, maybe on the very back end of it. But you know, you can maintain a shred of credibility by keeping him, but what is that shred worth? What do you think about Christian Yelich and the possibility of trading him?
Yeah, I think they should trade him. I think that they will trade him. And he, because like you said, he brings the most value. They can get the biggest return for him. I am a big Christian Yelich believer. I think that he has superstardom potential in him. I was actually on Alexa's show earlier, and she was kind of laughing at me because I said, you know, I would take Yelich over Stanton if I'm, you know, trying to acquire a player that I can really build with. And partly because of the salary situation, because Stanton just carries so much baggage when it comes to how much of that payroll is going to be allotted to him. But also he's had some injury issues, you know, some that were not his fault, like getting a hit in the face. But you don't, there's a little bit of, you know, uncertainty that I think comes with him. And I just think that Yelich, if you put him in to a lineup that is on a good team, a contending team, a strong lineup, I believe that he would blossom into a star. And yes, it would make absolutely no sense for the Marlins to be shedding themselves of everybody except for Yelich just to appease the very small fan base that is going to continue to attend games and really follow this team. It is not worth it from a PR standpoint, because they've taken a PR hit that they're not going to be able to recover from for a while. So it's semantics if you're talking about hanging on to him. And the fact that they might be good on the latter part of his time there, you don't know what's going to happen with him, you know, and how he's going to develop. You can't really like bank on that. So yeah, I think that they should just go for it 100%. You know, when I watched the Astros do something similar several years ago, I was very critical of them because I just felt like they were kind of making a mockery out of the words major league. I felt like they didn't even have a pitcher in that rotation that could give them 200 innings just to get these guys through a season. I thought it would be very detrimental for a lot of players that deserved better in terms of what they were trying to do and not being able to do it. But, you know, with less emotions involved, and I kind of look at the Marlins, I'm like, yeah, get rid of everybody and start over.
Yeah, I mean, as it stands right now, you're going in 2018, it's like, hey, we got Christian Yelich and JT Realmuto. We kept those guys. And then we got some prospects that, you know, they're good. We got some decent prospects in the pipeline now. But, you know, frankly, you move Christian Yelich, I think you kind of be like the White Sox a year ago, where you really have you might have more fan enthusiasm. Listen, there's no scenario where the fans are extremely enthused about trading that entire outfield, but I think you, at this juncture, from this point forward, you might have more enthusiasm with a haul of the ilk that the White Sox got and totally reshaping your farm system. I think that's an easier sell, quite frankly, but we'll see what happens there. But yeah, Yelich's contract, we talked about relievers making, you know, $9 million a year in this market. His contractual guarantee is $10.5 million over the next four seasons. So very valuable contract, very valuable player, burgeoning power, all that stuff. He could be a real superstar in another market and another situation. But yeah, go back to the Cardinals for a second. You know, the Marcelo Zuna trade, we've talked about in this podcast, and it's been, you know, analyzed the last couple of days. Obviously, that's a big impact bat for a team that needed one. Cardinals might still go out and get another one. But because they brought in Ozuna, that just added to this cluster they've got in their outfield, and became pretty clear that Randall Grichuk and or Stephen Piscotty would be on the move. So far, Piscotty is the one on the move. Not long after the Cardinals extend him with that six-year contract, he heads to Oakland for a couple minor league players. But, you know, Foot, this is just really a feel-good story more than a baseball trade. You know, Piscotty, a sentimental story, I should say. Piscotty's mother, Gretchen, was diagnosed with ALS in May, and you know, it's pretty easy to draw a line between everything he had going on in his family and you know, the rough and tumble 2017 he had. His numbers took a tumble, spent some time in the minor leagues, but he gets to head back home to the Bay Area. He's from Pleasanton, California, and just really great that the Cardinals and A's were able to work this deal out.
Yeah, it you know, the human side of this, which is something you don't see a lot of, especially this time of year. When it's all just about the dollars and the personnel and, you know, guys, you know, human beings are being traded for each other. And it's just a weird industry that we're in. But yes, I commend everybody. The A's said they just were so effusive with their praise of the Cardinals in saying that they are the classiest organization out there. This is something that that really needed to happen. For the sake of the player, and his family is in for a tough road. That is a horrific disease. I have said for a long time that I think it's probably the worst one, just because of what it does to a person in unspeakable ways. And he's such a young guy, and to watch his mother going through this is awful. To be home is a gift. And in the you know, the field that he works in, it's very, very difficult to actually play for a team that's near where you reside, where you grew up. And I, you know, it's just good. It's all good all around. And I hope that everybody kind of takes note, and best of luck to Stephen Piscotty, because I just feel horrible to family.
Yeah, we send the best out to the Piscotty family for sure. And you know, I'm really interested to see what happens next for the St. Louis Cardinals. They're in on a lot of conversations right now. They, you know, they've gone after Josh Donaldson and Manny Machado, and I don't know about them going solidifying a deal for a rental player like that. But you look at the Rays and Evan Longoria and Alex Colome, their closer. Potential twofer deal there would be really interesting. You know, the Cardinals could be on Wade Davis, still the top arm available on the relief market. So a lot of things, a lot of work yet to be done out in St. Louis. I want to hit on one last thing, Foot, from the winter meetings, the Rule 5 draft. We love the Rule 5 draft. It's one of the most anticipated days of the year to get in that room and watch it whip by you in about 5 minutes. you know, one guy after another comes off the board. I'm being sarcastic, of course. It's not the most thrilling of drafts, let's put it that way. But there was one interesting wrinkle that came out of it here this year, and that was Anthony Gose, former major league outfielder, last year converted to pitching in the Tiger system. The Astros, your Astros there in Houston, Foot, they are taking a chance on Anthony Gose. He throws a fastball in the high 90s. He's got a breaking ball. I think even the Astros admit this is probably a long shot. For those who don't know how the system works, you take a player in the Rule 5 because he wasn't protected by his former club, and you have to keep him on your big league roster, or he has to be on the DL for the entirety of the following campaign. If not, he has to be offered back to the previous team. So the odds of Ghost sticking in the Astros bullpen are perhaps long, but hey, you know, good left-handed relief is hard to come by. It's worth a shot, I guess.
It's definitely worth a shot. And the funny thing is, when I saw that they picked Anthony Gose, I said, oh, he's got the same name as the guy that the Astros got a few years ago when they acquired him in a trade and then immediately flipped him for Brett Wallace. Oh boy, those were interesting times. And then it turns out it's the same guy. So yeah, because he's a lefty, and you will always take a chance on a lefty if he shows you that he's got some velocity and he can you know, move the ball a little bit and hit his spots. It is a long shot, but at the same time, like, you look at if it was a different position, then I would say, you know, the Astros are coming off of a World Series championship. They clearly don't have a lot of competition going into spring training. Clearly, they have a lot of positions that are set. What they don't have is a good left-hander in the bullpen, quite frankly. They have Tony Sipp in the bullpen, who is a bad left-hander. And they need left-handed pitching. So it doesn't surprise me that they did this. And, they, you know, they do a lot of research. They do a lot of homework on this. It's not just a whim. Hey, why not? It's really more involved in that. And, you know, the Astros at this point, I'm like, I'm going to start deferring to you as far as really knowing what you're doing. And so, yes, it's kind of a long shot just because of the fact that he's converted himself into a left-handed pitcher after being an outfielder. But at the same time, I don't think it's a long shot because he's running into a crowded cast of characters that he has to beat somebody else out who's just fantastic.
All right, good stuff as always from Allison Footer. I want to thank her for joining us. I want to thank you all for tuning in. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz. This has been the Morning Lineup Podcast, and we'll talk to you next time.